Chapter 8. Oh, indeed, apostrophe Somerset replied. As soon as this business was disposed of, and Mr. Darrow brought up his van and assistant to begin operations, Somerset returned to the castle entrance. While under the archway, a man with a professional look drove up in a dog cart and inquired if Miss Power were at home today. As he has not yet returned, Mr. Avil, apostrophe was the reply. Somerset, who had hoped to hear an affirmative by this time, thought that Miss Power was bent on disappointing him in the flesh, notwithstanding the interest she expressed in him by telegraph, and as it was now drawing towards the end of the afternoon, he walked off in the direction of his inn. There were two or three ways to that spot, but the pleasantest was by passing through a rambling shrubbery, between whose bushes trickled a broad shallow brook, occasionally intercepted in its course by a transverse chain of old stones, evidently from the castle walls, which formed a miniature waterfall. The walk lay along the river brink. Soon Somerset saw before him a circular summer house formed of short sticks nailed to ornamental patterns. Outside the structure, and immediately in the path, stood a man with a book in his hand, and it was presently apparent that this gentleman was holding a conversation with some person inside the pavilion, but the back of the building being towards Somerset, the second individual could not be seen. The speaker at one moment glanced into the interior, and at another at the advancing form of the architect, whom, though distinctly enough beheld, the other scarcely appeared to heed in the absorbing interest of his own discourse. Somerset became aware that it was the Baptist minister, whose rhetoric he had heard in the chapel yonder. Now, apostrophe continued the Baptist minister, will you express to me any reason or objection, whatever which induces you to withdraw from our communion? It was that of your father, and of his father before him. Any difficulty you may have met with I will honestly try to remove, for I need hardly say that in losing you, we lose one of the most valued members of the Baptist Church in this district. I speak with all the respect due to your position, when I ask you to realize how irreparable is the injury you inflict upon the cause here by this lukewarm backwardness. ... I don't withdraw, ... said a woman's low voice within. What do you do? ... I decline to attend for the present. ... And you can give no reason for this? ... There was no reply. Or for your refusal to proceed with the baptism. ... I have been christened. ... My dear young lady, it is well known that your christening was the work of your aunt, who did it unknown to your parents, when as he had you in her power, out of pure obstinacy to a church with which she was not in sympathy, taking you surreptitiously, and indefensibly, to the fond of the establishment, so that the rite meant, and could mean nothing at all. ... But I fear that your new position has brought you into contact with the Pedobaptists, that they have disturbed your old principles, and so induced you to believe in the validity of that trumpery ceremony. ... It seems sufficient. ... I will demolish the basis of that seeming in 3 minutes. Give me but that time as a listener. ... I have no objection. ... Very well. ... First, then, I will assume that those who have influenced you in the matter have not been able to make any impression upon one so well grounded as yourself in our distinctive doctrine, by the stale old argument drawn from circumcision? ... You may assume it. ... Good, that clears the ground. And we now come to the New Testament. ... The minister began to turn over the leaves of his little Bible, which it impressed Somerset to observe was bound with a flap, like a pocketbook, the black surface of the leather being worn brown at the corners by long usage. He turned until he came to the beginning of the New Testament, and then commenced his discourse. After explaining his position, the old man ran very ably through the arguments, citing well-known writers on the point in dispute, when he required more finished sentences than his own. The minister's earnestness and interest in his own case led him unconsciously to include Somerset in his audience as the young man drew near, till, instead of fixing his eyes exclusively on the person within the summer house, the preacher began to direct a good proportion of his discourse upon his new auditor, turning from one listener to the other attentively, without seeming to feel Somerset's presence as superfluous. And now, apostrophe he said in conclusion, I put it to you, sir, as to her. Do you find any flaw in my argument? Is there, madam, a single text which, honestly interpreted, affords the least foothold for the Pedobaptists? In other words, for your opinion on the efficacy of the rite administered to you in your unconscious infancy? I put it to you both as honest and responsible beings. Apostrophe, apostrophe, he turned again to the young man. It happened that Somerset had been over this ground long ago. Born, so to speak, a high church infant, in his youth he had been of a thoughtful turn, till at one time an idea of his entering the church had been entertained by his parents. He had formed acquaintance with men of almost every variety of doctrinal practice in this country, and, as the pleadings of each assailed him, before he had arrived at an age of sufficient mental stability to resist new impressions, however badly substantiated, he inclined to each denomination as it presented itself, was everything by starts, and nothing long, apostrophe, till he had traveled through a great many beliefs and doctrines without feeling himself much better than when he set out. A study of fonts and their origin had qualified him in this particular subject. Fully conscious of the inexpediency of contests on minor ritual differences, he yet felt a sudden impulse towards a mild intellectual tournament with the eager old man purely as an exercise of his wits in the defense of a fair girl. Sir, I accept your challenge to us, apostrophe said Somerset, advancing to the minister's side. Via. At the sound of a new voice the lady in the bower started, as he could see by her outline through the crevices of the woodwork and creepers. The minister looked surprised. You will lend me your Bible, sir, to assist my memory? Apostrophe, apostrophe, he continued. The minister held out the Bible with some reluctance, but he allowed Somerset to take it from his hand. The latter, stepping upon a large moss-covered stone which stood near, and laying his hat on a flat beech bough that rose and fell behind him, pointed to the minister to seat himself on the grass. The minister looked at the grass, and looked up again at Somerset, but did not move. Somerset for the moment was not observing him. His new position had turned out to be exactly opposite the open side of the bower, and now for the first time he beheld the interior. On the seat was the woman who had stood beneath his eyes in the chapel, the Paula of Mr. Stancy's enthusiastic eulogies. She wore a summer hat, beneath which her fair curly hair formed a thicket round her forehead. It would be impossible to describe her as she then appeared. Not sensuous enough for an Aphrodite, and too subdued for a Hebe, she would yet, with the adjunct of doves or nectar, have stood sufficiently well for either of those personages, if presented in a pink morning light, and with mythological scarcity of attire. Half in surprise she glanced up at him, and lowering her eyes again, as if no surprise were ever let influence her actions for more than a moment, she sat on as before, looking past Somerset's position at the view down the river, visible for a long distance before her till it was lost under the bending trees. Somerset turned over the leaves of the minister's Bible, and began. In the first epistle to the Corinthians, the 7th chapter and the 14th verse. Here the young lady raised her eyes in spite of her reserve, but it being, apparently, too much labor to keep them raised, allowed her glance to subside upon her jet necklace, extending it with the thumb of her left hand. Sir, " said the Baptist excitedly. "I know that passage well. It is the last refuge of the Pedobaptists. I foresee your argument. I have met it dozens of times, and it is not worth that snap of the fingers. It is worth no more than the argument from circumcision, or the suffer little children argument." Then turn to the 16th chapter of the Acts, and the 33rd apostrophe, that too, cried the minister, is answered by what I said before. "I perceive, sir, that you adopt the method of a special pleader, and not that of an honest inquirer. Is it, or is it not, an answer to my proofs from the 8th chapter of the Acts, the 36th and 37th verses, the 16th of Mark, 16th verse, 2nd of Acts, 41st verse, the 10th and the 47th verse, or the 18th and 8th verse?" Very well then. Let me prove the point by other reasoning by the argument from apostolic tradition. He threw the minister's book upon the grass, and proceeded with his contention, which comprised a fairly good exposition of the earliest practice of the church and inferences therefrom. When he reached this point, an interest in his offhand arguments was revealed by the mobile bosom of Miss Paula Power, though she still occupied herself by drawing out the necklace. Testimony from Justin Martyr followed, with inferences from Irenaeus in the expression, "Omnes enim venit per semit ipsum salver, omnes inquam, cui prium renas gunter indum, infants a parvilos a pueros a juvens." At the sound of so much seriousness, Paula turned her eyes upon the speaker with attention. He next adduced proof of the signification of renascer in the writings of the fathers, as reasoned by Wall, arguments from Tertullian's advice to defer the rite, citations from Cyprian, Nazianzen, Chrysostom, and Jerome, and briefly summed up the whole matter. Somerset looked round for the minister as he concluded. But the old man, after standing face to face with the speaker, had turned his back upon him, and during the latter portions of the attack, had moved slowly away. He now looked back. His countenance was full of commiserating reproach as he lifted his hand, twice shook his head, and said, in the epistle to the Philippians, 1st chapter and 16th verse, it is written, that there are some who preach in contention and not sincerely. And in the 2nd epistle to Timothy, 4th Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.